hospitality is a sector that has been shaken to its core in recent months, with restrictions around the world meaning it's been anything but business as usual. But like in many other sectors, the silver lining now is a chance to rethink product, company structure, and impact. The hotel industry is at the heart of the conversation about innovation and sustainability in our world, and thankfully, those guiding experience and offerings in the sector are more than ever thinking deeply about the environment and community in which their properties are located. You're listening to The Entrepreneurs with me, Daniel Bache. This week, my guest is the serial entrepreneur and investor Oliver Ripley. He's the co-founder and CEO of Habitas, a new model of hospitality company which is changing the game in how hotels are built, operated, and engaging their local and global communities. Oliver is also the founder and CEO of private investment firm Ocean Group, which is investing in everything from real estate, technology, media, farming, and private aviation. But it's with Habitas that he really wants to change the way hotels are run. The company operates properties in Tulum and Namibia, with plans to expand into Bhutan, Saudi Arabia, Costa Rica, and across Mexico. From creating jobs and showcasing local artists and artisans, the aim is to boost and invest in local economies while also showing how choices in design and construction can play a huge role in impact. Habitas 3D prints elements for its hotels in its own factory, before they're flat-packed, shipped, and assembled on-site. The company says it can build a complete hotel this way in as little as 6 months. They've got an A-list of investors on board to help expand the model, including co-founders of Uber, Tinder, and Ocado. The company was launched in 2014 by Oliver alongside Kefir Levy and Eduardo Castillo. And as you'll hear, the concept was dreamed up at the Burning Man Desert Arts Festival, with the idea that luxury is more about experience than anything else. I spoke to Oliver while he was traveling to Paris. Here now is our conversation.
So Habitas was started by the three of us, and we all had very kind of different journeys to kind of how we got here. But I guess our why and our mission was kind of quite similar. From a young age, I've always loved to travel. I've always loved to explore places. And ultimately, when I go somewhere, it's the people that I'm with and the people that I meet that really have the most significance in and the memories we can kind of create when we're there. So for a long time, when I would travel, I kind of felt the existing hotels and brands that we'd go to kind of were focusing on the wrong thing. You'd go to another beautiful hotel with another incredible lobby, and you'd go into your room, and you know, I'm sitting in the room right now in a five-star hotel in Paris, and it's just, there's no soul in it. You know, it's the same kind of marble bathroom, the same kind of living room with a little mini bar and a table and desk and, you know, and whatever else. And ultimately, I kind of felt that there was something really, really missing there. And so I had a passion for travel. I had a passion for meeting people. I had a passion for languages for kind of a long time. Our journey with Habitas, or my journey with Habitas, really started through Burning Man. You know, my best friend and I would build a camp at Burning Man every year. And it was, again, it was just something that we kind of landed on. We met the founders at a tech conference in the US. We're invited to come. The first year we kind of came and built this little camp, and we just really fell in love with the place. A dear friend of ours said that spending a week in Burning Man is like spending a year with a friend in the outside world. Because that feeling of being present and immediate is so strong. There's no distraction of time. There's only really sunrise and sunset. There's no money. You can't buy anything. And so it was these beautiful experiences that we would share, first of all, with a small group of our friends. And then our camp grew and grew and grew. And then we added a soundstage. And then, you know, Burning Man also influenced us in our business with a lot of the art and the philanthropic and the impact and the giving back side. So it created a huge, huge kind of just impact on our lives and our own personal kind of growth. In that process, we met Kefir and Eduardo, who are my two co-founders. They themselves had their own journey, and they were fed up with the way that they were spending their time. They really wanted to surround themselves with inspiring people. They wanted to be in nature. They wanted to spend their time around amazing, you know, food and music experiences and building this incredible community. So they started hosting events in San Francisco and LA and bringing people together. And I remember I went to the first event, and we all had to arrive kind of at the same time because the gates closed. You know, our phones weren't working there. And we had a beautiful evening with a beautiful dinner and met really amazing people. Woke up the next day, did yoga, you know, spent the day on the lake. And it was something quite magical. But at the same time, it wasn't really a business because, you know, it was an events business and, you know, we sold tickets. And so it was at that point then that we kind of came together. And really the genesis was we would help Kefir and Eduardo with what was Gypset then. It wasn't Habitas. And they would help us with our Burning Man camp. It kind of evolved like that for a few years, but little by little, I'd hear more and more people talk about this thing. We renamed it from Gypset to Habitas. Amazing people, different walks of life from all over the US and Europe and so on. And what I started to see was that people more and more needed this in their lives. the ability to be able to connect with like-minded people, live a life with purpose of inspiration around the things that really matter to us, rather than maybe kind of like the shift that's happening in society right now from materialism to kind of more of a experiential kind of just world where, you know, mindfulness and consciousness and I think what's happening also now with COVID as well. So that's kind of when I really started to pay attention to it. And I was in the middle of building my last tech company. And so I was kind of fully focused on that. And as the tech company started to get to a point when we were in the process of selling it, I was like, there's something here. I want to spend, you know, my future now building something with real purpose and meaning. You know, you can make, you know, money and build companies and do this, but ultimately it wasn't meaningful enough for me. And so the journey continued where we decided to basically do a pop-up hotel. And we were asked by a guy in Tulum who'd spent 3 years building his hotel. He had 20 keys to buy out his hotel over years. And it was Kafir's idea. He said, listen, we've been hosting these events in San Francisco, LA, you know, in New York, and all over the US now. What if we did something internationally? We have this incredible community. They're asking what we're doing for New Year's. We have this opportunity to buy out this hotel and for December. Let's do it. And we ran the maths and the maths didn't work. You know, the guy had 20, 22 keys. He wanted a lot of money to buy out the hotel. And we were like, it just doesn't make sense. If we add all the all-inclusiveness, the music, the programming, the food, and we bring the community together, it's just, we're going to lose money on this. And I think it was actually Kafir's idea. He said, listen, we have all these tents sitting in a warehouse in LA. What if we were to ship the tents from LA to Tulum and put them up in the grounds of the hotel? And we could go from 20 keys to 40 keys. And so in essence, that's what we did. And basically for $50,000 or $60,000, we basically doubled the size of this guy's hotel and created this magical event and brought incredible people together. And at the end of the event, the owner of the hotel said, guys, listen, you know, this is amazing. This is beautiful what you've done. What if we leave your tents up in the grounds of the hotel and we'll become partners in whatever the tents make and let's see what happens. And for honestly, for us, it just made more sense to leave the tents there and buy new tents in LA. And so we did that. And I remember coming down 3 weeks later with my girlfriend and wanting to stay in one of our rooms just to see what it was like. And the hotel manager said, Ollie, I'd love you to stay in one of your rooms, but they're sold out. And I'm like, what do you mean they're sold out? And he goes, well, families love it because it's fun and adventurous for the kids. Couples love it because it's romantic. You can stay in one of the rooms in the normal hotel, but your rooms are sold out. And it was really that moment for me when, again, I realized more and more and just kind of the penny dropped that, you know, when we travel, we're really looking for something different, or a growing group of us is looking for a different kind of experience and really focusing on the people and the experiences. So taking that kind of in mind, we decided again as an experiment to open a hotel. And really the idea was to build an elevated Burning Man camp on the beach in Tulum. And we found a beautiful piece of unused beach. We found a great partner on the ground who owned the land, who basically allowed us to be able to build on his land. And we started building a hotel and we had no idea what we were doing. And we went way over budget within the first 4 weeks. And basically, I remember having a few kind of moments where we all came together and I said, great, where is this going to go now? And how do we get out of this? And in under 4 months, we opened a hotel. And what was kind of interesting is that we opened the hotel and it was all kind of super last minute. Even when guests were arriving, we were still kind of cleaning things out and getting things done, and the water didn't work and other things didn't work. But we brought the kind of community, the Habitas community together that had been together and grown since the last New Year's and had been coming to the events. And what was interesting is that there was only actually one person that was unhappy, and she basically left after the first day. Everybody else loved the experience so much and was so supportive of the journey and so supportive of the experience we're creating. And most important, so appreciative of the community that we created that, you know, people didn't care about the fact that the hot water wasn't working and that the rooms were still finishing and all this other kind of stuff like that. But, you know, we luckily had great support. We managed to kind of finish the hotel and we opened. And all of a sudden, this little hotel that we opened was appearing in magazines next to the Four Seasons here and the Six Senses there. And the Aman Hotel here is the best new experience, the best new hotel. And we're looking at each other going, what have we created? What have we done? We kind of created something for ourselves. And I think in many ways, because we didn't have the experience and the hindsight and I guess the formal training and education and conditioning of how people build hotels, we created something that we wanted to experience. And if we liked it, hopefully our friends would like it. And that was really kind of the genesis of how we started the hospitality hotel side of the business.
It's an absolutely fascinating story. And there is a lot to unpack there, Oliver, but sort of building on the spark that you had out of Burning Man and being there and sort of experiencing what it's like to bring in everything with you and leave little impact as well. I think you sort of grew on that model. Is that correct? Because now actually you're building hotels and manufacturing them in different places, bringing pieces together later and even 3D printing some of them as well. Is that right?
Yeah, that's totally right. I mean, I think, look, a lot of, for me, there's been a big journey and a big awakening on this. I think a lot of the initial passion for the sustainability and the impact came from Eduardo and Kafir as we started to kind of build the brand and really think about ways in which we could support the local community and to give back. And from a sustainability angle, Eduardo's incredibly passionate about really, you know, not talking the talk, but actually doing stuff. And it's super impressive, kind of, again, what the teams managed to do on the ground. So we started naturally creating these kind of community experience hotels. And interestingly enough, as we evolved, really the purpose of what we're doing right now is we're going into new locations and we are hiring people from inside the local communities. And generally, these are people that don't have classical educational training in hospitality, but we're selecting people by the biggest smiles and the biggest hearts. You know, I always say that if my grandmother worked in a hotel, she would probably be the most popular person in the hotel because her smile is so big, her warmth is so warm. And we're not this kind of formal Swiss white glove butler school kind of service, quite the opposite. It's that element of human connection, human touch that exists, not just between the guests, but between the guests and the team as well. So our commitment really now is going into these places, setting up pop-up schools, selecting people with the biggest hearts, the biggest smiles, teaching them the hard skills, teaching them the technical skills, and then creating jobs. And then off the back of that, supporting and creating microeconomies around the hotel, where again, we're sourcing everything from local produce to engaging local artisans to build elements of furniture, of the uniforms, of other things. But in that way, you know, we're able to support the local economy going in. And then when our guests are coming in, arriving and staying with us, that experience is able to continue to be extended. And ultimately, I think travel has this incredible gift to create compassion between people. The world now more than ever, you know, as isolated, dislocated, as a lot of political things that are happening. But I think travel levels all of that and allows people to come to a place and to connect as humans and to really understand a culture and understand people rather than just a preconception that may exist. So from our perspective, the journey we want to take our guests on is really about expanding their minds when they come somewhere and really reconnecting not only with the people that they came with, the people that they meet, but also the local community and the local culture.
That's great. And on the point of local people and culture and the impact you can have there, I know philanthropy is a big, big thing for you and for the company as well. We've said in recent weeks on this show that, you know, if you want to build something with impact, it's better to do it from the ground up than to come back to it at a later date. So I think that's part of the philosophy and how you've sort of started to branch out even further. I know there are plans to open in some pretty interesting places. In fact, you've got a footprint in Namibia, Bhutan. You've chosen some incredible remote spots in Mexico. Tell me about your thinking there.
So Namibia is one of the most, I think, interesting and unique places in the world. You know, modern life began in Namibia before Namibia was formed, but in that area of Africa. So it has a very, very special energy. You know, it has some of the most beautiful sunrises and sunsets in the world. And I think from our perspective, as far as safari goes, most safari, you sit in the back of a truck with binoculars and you look at animals and you do two drives a day and then maybe you go to the spa and that's your safari. We really want our guests to immerse wherever they go in the local culture, the local people, the local nature. So again, our idea is, sure, you can go on a game drive in the back of a car, but you could also go on an electric bike, or you could also go barefoot. Or we have the local sands tribesmen there, which are some of the oldest tribes people in the world. They teach you how to barefoot run. They'll teach you survival skills. You'll sleep out in the bush at night. So it's just a much more immersive and exciting and interesting way to be able to spend time. And then also from a conservation perspective as well, really understanding the concerns of the local people and really understanding the local, both environmental and ecological things that are going on. You know, we have the anti-poaching unit on site where, again, we can do a Barry's boot camp in the morning and you can train with them before kind of like at sunrise. But then you can then go and do cheetah tagging and really learn about the conservation that we're doing there. So, you know, Namibia is really full on the conservation side of things. Bhutan is really also one of the most interesting and inspiring places in the world. You know, they have something called gross national happiness. And the previous king, I think, introduced this when he was, I could be wrong, 17 or 18 years old. And a lot of people were coming into Bhutan and trying to advise him on how he should do policy and do this. And he turned around and said, you know, what do you guys know about happiness? You're chasing material kind of happiness and success, and that doesn't make you happy. And so he created gross national happiness. And I think every decision that gets made in the country has to go through their ministry of this. And so I think it's the first country to be fully carbon zero or carbon negative, in fact. They really focus on people's happiness, which is driven on various metrics, but financial is not one of those. It's quite a closed country, and we were just very lucky to be able to come there and be welcomed. And again, what we're seeing more and more is that our brand is appealing to people, not just appealing to people at an individual level or a local community level, not just appealing to people at an enterprise or business level, but also appealing to people on a more of a governmental level as well. One of the places right now that we're also doing a project is the Middle East of Saudi Arabia. And again, I believe that I have quite an open mind, and I went to Saudi for the first time, and I had a preconception. You know, I kind of, you read a lot of stuff in the press and you see things and you kind of, you know, you can't help but have certain ideas. I can tell you honestly that my mind was blown away. The people I met, the culture, the historic change that's happening inside of the country right now is so amazing. It's really something that, again, people are giving, you know, the kingdom a very hard time. And I'm taking this conversation not as a political conversation because, you know, I'm not a politician and I can't comment on that. But the fact that young people want change, the fact that young people aren't afraid to stand up and try and make change in the country, you know, I really, really admire that. And so, you know, it was something that I myself went there and I was like, wow, I was really surprised and taken aback. And my mind was shifted, that whole idea about expanding our minds. My mind was super expanded when I went there. And I'm excited because, again, we're able to help shape a narrative where we can invite people to come to Saudi. Have you been yourself, by the way? Have you ever visited?
I have not had the opportunity to travel there, not yet.
We're doing a project in a place called Alula, which we're announcing in a couple of days. It's a UNESCO protected heritage site, kind of where the Nabatean Empire basically used as a trade route. Same civilization that created Petra and the whole area around Wadi Rum. And it's been closed and protected for decades, you know, because of the historical and political reasons. And now they're opening it up. And it is phenomenal. And so, you know, again, I think what's amazing about travel is the ability to invite people somewhere and allow people to make their own decision. But not on a political level, but to meet local people, to immerse themselves in local culture, to have experiences, to meet great like-minded people. And ultimately, you know, then people can make their own minds up about a place.
That's very interesting. And some of the doors that have been open to you and the opportunity is in that you're not coming in just thinking about the profit and throwing up a hotel, as you said. It's in working with people on the ground. Now, obviously, that may have been a little bit more difficult in the past few months for a guy that, as you said to me off air, you're quite often on a plane. What's that been like? And how do you sort of continue those important conversations on where you want the business to go?
I think on a personal level, being rooted in one place for 4 months was, you know, I think for many of us, like, I didn't remember doing that since probably I was in school. So, you know, I think it was, you know, it was a really great personal experience to do that. And I think it's taught me certain things and, you know, what I want to prioritize, you know, who I want to spend my time with on a basic human level and the things that really kind of matter to me. It was definitely an interesting shift. It was also a very challenging time as well, because obviously for hospitality as an industry, we were hit as kind of really one of the hardest in the space. And so, you know, February, March, when the world was falling apart, all of a sudden, you know, you're faced with the problem of closing your hotels, of having to lay off staff, ultimately trying to figure out how to make these decisions because you're dealing with people's lives here. And it was super stressful and really difficult. And we tried as much as possible to support our team members in Tulum, for example. And this is actually kind of all credit to Eduardo and Kafir. Even though we had to temporarily lay off our staff, we still created a subsidy program to be able to still pay them, and also created food kitchens, not only for our own teams, but also for the local community. So we had food banks going on and other programs. So that was definitely kind of challenging. And then obviously with our own team as well, and you know, in our head office, again, it's stressful, as everybody knows, like, you know, working out of a small apartment and really, you know, not being able to go outside. And, you know, just I think psychologically and mentally, there's a lot of pressure that's on people. I was super proud of our team. And again, I'm really just amazed at the passion and commitment everybody has for what we're creating. Because I think for us, this is not a business. This is not just, let's create bottom line and let's create profit. It's really a way that we can change and create impact in the world, and something I think that we're all really, really passionate about. So it was challenging learning to work remotely, learning to work on Zoom calls, spending a whole day on Zoom calls. You know, should I be on all these Zoom calls, or, you know, can I do this more efficiently? But at the same time, you know, we were also able to, once we stabilized our operations or closed our operations, we were also able to actually take a deep breath and look around. And I remember actually going for a long walk once and being like, actually, you know, what's going on in the world, as difficult as it is right now, is actually probably something that I hope will come out of, and it will shift people's minds and it'll shift our priorities in terms of, you know, really kind of what's important in our lives and how people will travel. And I think this shift in consciousness that's happening, and I think the shift towards just community and the shift towards health and wellness and so on, I think is actually really exciting for what we're trying to do as Habitas and as a global brand. We're starting to see real opportunities are evolving around this as well. You know, at a very basic level right now, there's just an incredible group of people that maybe would not have been available to us in the past because, you know, the world was growing full speed and people were in these jobs and so on. But now we're seeing amazing people come to us and want to work with us. And we've hired amazing people to join the family and join the team that, you know, maybe we didn't have the opportunity to do before. We're seeing new opportunities in terms of new locations and places that are being presented to us and new deals and new homes that we're now pursuing and doing. And I think there's also been a little bit of a repricing in the market as well, whereas things were pretty expensive, especially for a young kind of startup to kind of go out there and do deals. And now I feel like there's been a recalibration of that as well.
I guess that's kind of exciting. You mentioned the market sort of going towards things like wellness and sustainability. Those things are already on people's mind, and even before this period in the pandemic, and perhaps even accelerated now as far as what they're interested in and where they want to spend their money. How have you thought about how you could harness that as both an opportunity to grow the brand, but also to sort of drive home your overall mission?
Yeah, you know, I think what's interesting is one of the things that we are, you know, kind of just looking at, and I think we're living more than anything, is that there's a whole idea of like modern luxury. What is luxury? Is luxury, you know, kind of wearing a, I don't know, a fancy watch, or is luxury a material possession you can buy? Or is luxury a feeling that, you know, exists in the experiences and the memories that we create with other people? You know, an experience that basically becomes part of us, you know, and changes the way we see the world. You know, and this could be as simple as a conversation around a fireplace with a new friend, or, you know, watching the sunset, or listening to a concert underneath, you know, the night sky. That this, I think, is where the world is shifting towards. And I think, again, you know, you go and stay in a luxury five-star hotel, and last night I had chocolates on my pillow. I mean, do I care about that? Not really, you know, but do I care about the fact that there's a lot of plastic in my room and, you know, and other things that, yes, I care about that, you know. And so there's something I think now that we are able to have a voice in this narrative that's happening. And again, there are lots of other really, really smart people that are doing this and that's being this. So I think it's us having a voice. But I think what's also super exciting about what we're doing in hospitality is that the majority of hospitality companies are management companies, they're operators. So they will come in and they will manage a property on behalf of an owner. And that owner will typically go and find a architect that he will work with the management company to be able to develop a project and a concept. At which point they'll be able to kind of work with the contractor to be able to come up with a budget. They'll be able to approve the budget, and then they'll basically build the project. And anyway, this could take anywhere from 3 to 5 years to complete. You've got multiple stakeholders with conflicts of interest. You've obviously got a less efficient process because there was obviously kind of commercial kind of markups and other things going on there. And, you know, many brands, for example, like brands like Six Senses, which I think are amazing kind of brands and operators and so on. You know, I've heard feedback where there'll be frustration because, you know, they may want to, you know, engage the most sustainable practices and building practices, but at the end of the day, they're the management company. They don't have a voice in that. And because we've vertically integrated that entire process, we can, for example, be sustainable in not only in the way that we build, not only in the materials that we use, but also how we operate as well. So that really allows us to be able to stay pure to our brand and pure to our voice and really make these changes, but also do them much faster than maybe a traditional management company or developer or operator or architectural firm would be able to do. And again, we did this really not because we knew what we were doing. I'm sure if we knew what we were doing, we'd probably become a management company. We did this because we were like, oh, you know, we want to build a next hotel. Great. Okay, let's go and start working with third-party architects. Okay, we give them a spec. It's built for us, you know, design forward, modular, sustainable, and, you know, they'd come back to us with plans which were not. And then we'd cost it up and it was way too expensive. And we're like, we can't afford this. And so how do we do this? How can we afford this? And how can we move? Because, you know, one of the things, again, I think what's really exciting about the partnership I have with my co-founders is, you know, I'm a serial entrepreneur and I love to build companies and I love to solve problems. And so I was looking at this and I was thinking, okay, how do we do this at scale? How do we really, if we're going to change the narrative in the world, it's not going to be from having one or three hotels. It's from having, you know, hotels all around the world. And so, you know, that process and that inefficiency was something we started to solve for. And we started to, you know, basically the first step was to bring in a board of architects and engineers in-house. And we partnered with one of our partners now, Roberto, and he brought on board his team. And we were able then to really think about how to, you know, build sustainable. And then after that, we started still working with factories in China and and South America and South Africa, and the same kind of problems. We were relying on third parties. It would be Chinese New Year. We'd have problems with logistics. We'd have problems with quality and other stuff. And we were like, well, hang on a second. What if we were just to bring this in-house? And what if we were to just do some of this stuff in-house? And that's what we started doing. So we opened a warehouse where we started to streamline some of the process we'd normally outsource in-house. And then in that process, we were like, hang on a second. There's the ability to be able to actually streamline this even further by using technology. And again, you know, tech, something that I've spent a lot of time doing in the past and built and sold two tech companies. And Roberto and Kafir's brain also kind of like, we started thinking about what are the solutions that we can bring on board where we can, you know, just do things more efficiently and differently. And that's how we ended up building our own modular factory. That's how we can now 3D print elements of the hotel. And that's why we have the entire value chain end to end under one roof.
So interesting. Just lastly, Oliver, and I know I've taken a lot of your time and I do appreciate that, you talked about, in many cases, the disconnect between a company or entrepreneurs and what's actually happening on the ground if you have sort of a management company or property developer, something like that. I wonder what you might advise business people trying to have an impact and build good relationships on the ground to do something exciting in a different place, a different country. What might you advise? It could be a hotel or any type of business, really.
You know, I think one of the things that, as a brand, Habitas really embodies is authenticity. And again, I thank Kafir and Eduardo for this in many ways, because it's easy to say something or it's easy to try and sell something. But at the end of the day, passion and authenticity is something which you really can't fake. And so I think what really resonates with people with the Habitas brand is the passion, authenticity, and what we're trying to do in this world. And the idea for us is our mission to create greater human connection and greater understanding between people is something that really resonates. And I think people see this in their own lives and see, again, as we said, how technology can dislocate us and can see how, you know, they're looking for a change. And so we've been very lucky in as far as building those authentic relationships, because they're real relationships. And staying true to ourselves and as a brand, as a company, you know, holding ourselves accountable to really what we're going out to achieve. And I've had many fights with Eduardo where I've said to him, hey, let's build a swimming pool here. And he's like, we can't build a swimming pool because that's going to do this to the environment. That's going to do this. We can't do this. And I'm like, dude, this is a business. And he's like, no. We are true to our brand. We're going to do this. And at the end of the day, huge amount of respect. And, you know, kind of, I agree with him.
Very well said, Oliver. Thank you so much for your time. This has been really interesting.
Awesome. I really appreciate it, and I look forward to hanging out more.
Oliver Ripley, CEO and co-founder of Habitas. You can learn more about their hotels at ourhabitas.com. That's it for this week's program. My thanks to Oliver and to Christy Evans, who mixed and edited this show. I'm Daniel Bache. Thank you so much for listening, and goodbye.